Hey, welcome to the 16th episode of the CrackerCast podcast. This is David from MrCracker.com, and it is May 5th of 2010. So it's getting pretty hot here, and I still haven't installed the AC. So I'm sitting here all sticky, you know, sweating, feeling gross. I know, sexy. Accept it. Anyways, so my phone just died. The charger hole got destroyed, so I haven't been able to use my phone. So in the meantime, I've been using this ancient 2007 LG that looks like it got sat on by a couple obese people, but at least it works. But in the meantime, I'm waiting for my Droid Incredible to come in the mail. Super excited. Just came out recently, and it is probably the best phone available for Verizon that competes with the iPhone. That's the only thing keeping me from switching to AT&T and getting the iPhone is because of the crappy service, as I've heard, at least in my area. Anyways, let's get into the news. First up we have, let's see here, 1.5 million Facebook accounts for sale in web forum, VeriSign reports. So this Russian fella from the motherland, he is selling, basically he got around 1.5 million Facebook accounts. I'm assuming he got that via phishing attacks or some kind of worm, kind of botnet situation probably. But the point is, he's selling around 1.5 million Facebook accounts. That means 1 in 10 or something people's accounts have been hacked. So there's a good chance that one of you listening to this has your account compromised. Yeah, probably not. But he is selling, let's see here, $25 for 1,000 accounts with 10 or less friends, and $45 for accounts with 10 or more friends. So if you do the math, 1.5 million accounts for 25 bucks is about 38 grand. It's a pretty good sum. And at 45 bucks per 1,000, it's around 67.5 grand. So yeah, he can make bank, but I doubt he'll sell that much, especially with people looking for him now, trying to arrest him. Alright, next up we have 353,812,819 total number of personal records hacked since 2005. That is a pretty hefty sum. That's a lot of people's sensitive information. But this is pretty much the total number of records recorded since 2005, when the Privacy Rights Clearinghouse has begun tracking breaches, security breaches. So this includes like driver's license, security, social security numbers, account numbers, you know, things like that. So as you can see, security isn't getting better. Next up we have Texas man to plead guilty to building botnet for hire. So this bimbo, he got a 22,000 computer botnet, and then to show off to this customer that he was trying to sell it to, he attacked a couple websites, you know, bada bing, bada boom, takes it down, caught, busted. But he was basically selling each infected computer for 15 cents per computer. And that came out to about 3.3 grand for all 22,000. Now, I'd say he's getting ripped off, because I'd rather buy complete computers, hacked computers, for 15 cents than 1,000 Facebooks for 45 bucks, because, you know, a whole computer, you can pretty much bug the whole computer and capture all keystrokes. That could get you pretty much information and everything that person does, including all his banking, websites, everything. I mean, that's possible with Facebook, but you're pretty much chancing it, because not everyone uses the same email and password combination on Facebook as they do on their email. And plus, even once you have their email account, you're not guaranteed to get, you know, their banking and PayPal or whatever websites they subscribe to that involve the money. But if you're wondering, that's the whole point of people buying Facebooks, because of the chance that the username and password they use is the same password they use for their email. Because as you know, to log into Facebook, you have to use an email, and most of the time people use the same password for pretty much every website they go on. So once you have their email password information, you pretty much have their access to their whole internet life, like I mentioned in a previous episode. And from there, you can go on to get access to pretty much every website he goes to, including a bunch of websites that include money, you know, because some websites like Amazon, they keep your, what's it called, your credit card information on file. So you just go on there, buy stuff, you know, all that good shit. But next up we have blank dominating automated malware kit market. Who, guess what the blank is? I bet you'll never guess. That's right, Russia. Mother Russia. I'm sure you would have never guessed that. But basically, Russia is dominating in the market for automated malware creation kits that are sold online to phishers and data thieves. So these kits, they range from around $400 to $1,000. And additional hosting services are often offered in case the attacker's primary site is taken down. So Russia's been getting bank on these malware kits that people seem to be buying in bulk. So, as you can see, there's a market for malware. Alright, next up we have teen hacker gets a year's probation. So, this teen who brought down Sony's gaming network has been sentenced to a year's probation and to perform 250 hours of community service. That sounds like fun. 250 hours, that's like, let's see, 250 divided by 24. It's about 10 and a half days of community work. Probably like cleaning up the streets on the highway or cleaning after polluters, I mean litterers, dumpers, good stuff. But that's what he did. He took down he infected Sony with a, I believe, a virus, they say, which caused it to be repeatedly crashed from November 16th to 26th. That's kind of sad. Have not being able to find the reason of your website crashing for 10 whole days. Yeah. Let's see. He also has to pay around $5,000. They tried to get $33,000, but the judge ruled that amount was too excessive for a teenager. Good for him. And last but not least, Palin email hacker convicted of 204 charges. On 204 charges. So I spoke about this this dude who hacked Palin's email, and basically all he did was he went to she had a Yahoo account, and he went to Yahoo and he went to forgot password, and he was confronted with the password reset questions. So basically all the security questions Palin made to reset her password, and surprisingly, or not surprisingly, he was able to find all the answers simply by searching online, like Wikipedia and things like that. So I mean, I don't let's see, and with these charges, he can get a maximum of 25 years in prison and $500,000 in fines. Woo! He probably won't get that much, but still, it's kind of a big punishment. Personally, I think that Palin was just ignorant, and she shouldn't have been so stupid in making her security questions to simple things that are easily find searchable online. But let's see. Yeah, that's pretty much it for this week. If you would like to see a lot more news, lots more news on security and hacking, you can subscribe to my newsletter. You can find that at MrCracker.com. Look on the right-hand side. There is an email and name box. Put it in. Click submit. You will receive a confirmation link in your email. Confirm your email address, and you'll be subscribed and receive pretty much once a week, if I don't skip out on a week. And you'll receive pretty much all the news for that current week. Good stuff. All right, let's get into the main topic. So this week's main topic was suggested to me by Mina, or it could be Mina, but I'm going to go with Mina. So thank you, Mina, for the email. And Mina suggested that I talk about the Metasploit framework. Now, for those of you that have, you know, at all researched any topic in the hacking world, or whatever you want to call it, then there's a good chance that you came across the Metasploit framework. And it's become very popular since it came out a few years ago because of its ease of use. And basically what the Metasploit framework is a platform for writing, testing, and using exploit code. And the primary users of this framework are usually professionals that are performing penetration tests, and then it's used for shellcode development and vulnerability research. but it's also become a very widely used program or application by script kiddies. And that's because once you've figured it out, it's so easy to use. You literally don't have to know anything about exploits and how they work and how to make them because of the ones that are already available in the Metasploit framework. And you can it's literally as easy as choosing an exploit, configuring it, and bam, executing it. And it does all the work for you and pops up a shell of the with the access to the other computer or system. But it's basically a very, very easy to use system and very powerful. But you can install it on Unix, any Unix system mostly, and that's including the Mac. Then there's Windows also. But the thing is, on Windows, it's kind of limited because you can only use the GUI version and the web version on Windows. The command line version may appear to work in Windows, but as soon as you start using it, it starts to bug out. Things don't work as they should. But there's a way around that. You can actually use it with Cygwin on Windows platform, and it should work without a problem. And what Cygwin is, for those of you who haven't heard of it, is basically a program that basically duplicates the environment, the Unix environment in a Windows system, kind of an emulator, but it's not really an emulator. It just kind of replicates the, basically makes a Unix system seem like a Unix system on a Windows machine. That's pretty much the easiest way I can explain it. And that's Cygwin. But if I were you, I would use it on a Unix system because everything works on a Unix system. It's completely, you have full-featured kind of access to the whole thing. And the tougher part would probably be installing it on a Unix system. But once you do it once, it's easily done multiple times. But if you don't want to go through the whole installation process, you can actually just open up a backtrack. I talked about backtrack in a previous episode, but it's included in the backtrack distribution, and it's ready to go out of the box. So if you want to check it out, give it a test run, just download the backtrack, either live distro or just install it on, you know, on some backup system you have, whatever. But it comes, it has a few interfaces, the whole platform. It's got, there's a console interface, then there's a GUI interface. That's, for those of you who don't know what that stands for, it stands for Graphics User Interface. That might be the easiest one to use. There's also the command line interface, and then there's the web front interface. So whatever floats your boat, use whichever one you want to use. Whichever one, you know, you like the best. So now let's look at the how powerful the Metasploit framework is and what you can do with it. And we'll look at the main feature of it, which is exploiting, launching exploits, basically exploiting systems. And so I'll break it down into four steps, the four easy steps of using the Metasploit framework for using exploits. So the first step would be to choose and configure an exploit. And there's actually a simple keyword, simple command. It's called use, and then the exploit name. And then once you choose an exploit, you configure it. And you configure it by changing the options it has. And to view the options of that exploit, you just use the show options command. And normally, there's only a few required options that you have to actually configure. And that's like the R host, the remote host, or the target host. And then there's the R port, which is the remote port, or otherwise known as the target computer port. And you set those by using the set command. And then number two step would be to check whether the actual exploit you chose would work against that target computer. But keep in mind that sometimes it isn't possible to find out unless you actually exploit the system first. And then you'll find out whether or not it actually worked. And then step three would be to select and configure the payload. And what the payload is basically the code that will run on the target system after you successfully exploit the system. So once that exploit is successful and goes through, this is the code that will run on that system. And usually it's the code that brings up a shell of that with access to that system. And you could configure the payload to be a bind shell payload. It could be a reverse connect payload. Basically, there's many options. I'm not going to go into each one of them, explain them. But if you want information about each payload and what it does in detailed instructions, then you can use the info command. And you basically type in info and the payload name, and it'll give you detailed information about the given payload. Then you can also set the options for the payload, configure the payload by using the show options command, and then the set command to set the options. And last but not least, the last step, step 4, would be to launch the exploit. And that's literally as easy as just typing the exploit command. Just type an exploit, bam, and it starts to execute the exploit. And if it was successful, once it executes the exploit and everything went fine, then it will execute and provide you with an interactive command shell on the exploited system. And bam, you have a connection from the system, and you have privileges. And bam, you can go on to either escalate your privileges if you don't have root yet, and then do whatever you want, install a rootkit, some backdoor it, delete things, whatever floats your boat. So as you can see, these four simple steps, and it's literally, it's easy as it sounds, literally. It's just simple keyboard strokes, and bam, you're in a system. Now, it's got more options, obviously, than that. It's got evading options for IDSs and IPSs, which stands for intrusion detection systems and intrusion prevention systems. So it has options, basically configuration options that help you stay undetected from these systems, and that includes basically encoding it in certain ways. But there's also auxiliary modules, and these are things like port scanning, denial of service attacks, and fuzzing services. Basically, fuzzing means to test a target system or a certain application for buffer overflows, SQL injection vulnerabilities, cross-site scripting vulnerabilities, format string vulnerabilities, and error handling. And you can test it for transversal attacks, command and execution vulnerabilities. Basically, fuzzing attacks basically just look for holes and stuff like that. So it's got a lot of different features. It's such a great, huge platform. And it also has tons and tons of features that I'm not going to go in. Let's see, what else is there? Oh, there's another option I can think of. It has the ability to use chainable proxies. And for those of you who don't know what a proxy is, it's basically what happens when you connect to a proxy. You connect to another computer, and then you connect to the main, to your target. So basically, you have someone in between you to mask where the traffic is coming from, to stay anonymous. And I believe I read somewhere that someone tested the framework with about 500 SOCs and HTTP proxies that were configured randomly in a chain, and it worked without a problem. So as you can see, it works. So as you can see, bunch of features. And I do recommend you should definitely get into and learn how to use the Metasploit framework. But don't fall into the scriptkiddie path. Don't just get into it and learn exactly how to use the program, but not know anything else about what you're doing, like how the exploit works, what kind of exploit you're using, what it does, why does it do it, how is it made. Don't use Metasploit until you actually know those aspects of hacking, because it's not going to do anything for you. What happens when you can't use the framework? Then you're pretty much screwed. So that's pretty much the Metasploit framework. I'll leave a link in the show notes, as well as some other resources if you wish to continue to learn the Metasploit framework. The hacking website of the week is rootkit.com, rootkit.com, and it has a large collection of rootkits, as well as many articles on rootkits, how to develop them, you know, different techniques for different operating systems. And they have a large forum with lots of users who can help you out if you have any problems. For those of you who don't know what a rootkit is, I have a definition right on my website. There's an article on it, MrCracker.com, called "What is a Rootkit?" And a rootkit is a powerful software that has the potential of gaining control of a system without being detected by security mechanisms. So pretty much a rootkit, once installed on your computer, can be installed all the way down to the kernel level, and alter system commands and just, you know, mess with the output. So if you're trying to see all the files in a certain directory and you use the show directory commands, The rootkit can choose to hide certain files that, once you found, would pretty much show you that it was infected. So it can be used to hide certain bad files. It could alter output of certain commands, like showing you what processes are running. It could hide itself. Basically, it's got a lot of potential for gaining, keeping access, administrative access, or root access on a certain system without being detected. It's funny, I was looking for a definition, a simple definition to read on the podcast, and I went to the Google's define feature. So define, and I put a word, rootkit, and the first about 10 were all fine definitions, except for the last one, which I absolutely don't understand why it's there. But it says the definition of a rootkit is, quote, prostituting to pay for the habit. Weird. So I actually received some feedback for the podcast, which is actually really exciting. The first email came from Katie, and she wrote, I just downloaded your podcast episode 6 via iTunes, and I loved your piece about female hackers. I am a female interested in hacking after I got a lot of attempted DOS attacks reported by my router log, and I agree totally. It's a popular misconception that hacking is a male-only interest. I'm still only at script kiddie stage, but I read your ebook, and I'm in the process of furthering my knowledge of HTML, and also wanting to learn C or C++. Good for you. I'd love for females to be more interested in computers and the internet. Trust me too. I am going to university to do a computer security course and am worried about the gender ratio. Well, this was kind of a pointless email, I guess. Sorry for clogging up your inbox. No, trust me. I loved receiving all emails. I love the work you're doing, though. Keep it up. Thanks. I will. But, you're not the only one worried about the gender ratio. I'm actually going to a university this fall, and I'm kind of worried about the ratio as well, because it won't be as fun if the majority of my classes include 90% men, if you know what I mean. You know, this gives me some hope for all you females out there. Shout out, feel free to email me. But yeah, this was actually interesting, because this was the first email I received from a female, and I'm not talking about just for the podcast. I'm talking about for my website, MrCracker.com. I get pretty much daily emails, 3-4 emails a day, and literally this was the first one from a female. just proves my point. And next up we have, this was from, what's his name, Prank Master, and he wrote, I'm glad to find this site and website is good and intuitive too. I like your podcast, also right from your Chinese accent on the first episode to social networking. Well, thanks a lot. I got my inspiration from Peter Chow. For those of you who don't know who he is, go to youtube.com/user/pyrobooby. Really hilarious. Seriously, so funny. Anyways, he suggested a couple things. He wrote, it'd be good to maintain an additional page on your website, which should contain all the websites of the week along with its description. Yeah, I'm actually thinking about doing this. So I'll take all the websites. For those of you who don't know, I have a website of the week for the podcast, and I have a website of the week in the newsletter as well. And I've been doing the newsletter a lot longer than I've been doing the podcast, so I have a large list of websites that I've recommended. So I'll put that together into a list and put it on the website soon. Also, he wrote, video tutorials for starters in every hacking field so that one can grasp a little bit of every field and decide which field to pursue. So he recommended me to add a video page with simple tutorials on pretty much every topic of hacking, so people can decide what interests them the most and to be able to choose. I'll start doing more videos. I've been trying to do more videos, but they always end up, you know, not coming out. But I'll start doing those, and I'll add a video page. I'm actually going to be redesigning the whole website soon, and I'll be adding all of these features in the new released website. So thanks for your comments. For those of you who want to email me any comments, questions, concerns, absolutely anything, you can email me at comments@MrCracker.com, or go ahead to the blog, MrCracker.com, and leave a comment on the blog. So that's it for this week's episode. You can follow me at twitter.com/MrCracker, and I'll see you in a couple weeks.